Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook.
Welcome to Hooked on Sport. What a week, or fortnight, I should say, of cricket. Who better to than SA journalist Ben Hook? Hooky, how are you going?
Sophie, really well. Has been an amazing week, a couple of weeks of cricket. Not great for South Australians, unfortunately, but plenty to talk about regardless, and always looking forward to locking horns with you on it, because you are sneaky smart on this sport. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, I will take you for that. I don't know how sneaky smart I am. I don't think it's particularly smart or sneaky, to be honest. But look, let's just hit it off top of the show straight away. We've got to speak about Alyssa Healy. The captain of the Australian cricket side has announced her retirement for the end of this season. But I don't think it'll be the end of her. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of her in the commentary box.
Yeah, 100% so. So, Usman Khawaja and now Alyssa Healy, two of the all-time great opening batters in Australian cricket. Of course, Alyssa Healy, a wicketkeeper as well. So she is going to be sadly missed. We're still going to see her for much of the Australia-India series, which gets underway pretty much as soon as the Women's India Premier League is over. She won't play in the T20s, but she will play the one days and she'll captain the Test match. So if I was just thinking, when a woman retires from sport, they generally start to think about having kids. Could you imagine the offspring of Mitchell Starc and Alyssa Healy? That will be some sort of cricketing performer. It's going to open the batting. It's going to open the bowling and bowl absolutely 150 kilometre an hour lightning bolts. And then 25 overs into the 50 over match, take over the wicket-keeping gloves and become a wicket-keeper for the second half of the innings. So it's going to be someone pretty special, I reckon, the Starc-Healy combo.
Yeah, I think the genes will be outstanding, but gosh, it's either going to be a really tall human being or a completely short human being, or a mix of both. I'm not sure. They're completely different types of body types, those two. It's quite funny seeing them standing next to each other.
Well, I'll tell you what, if it talks out the side of its mouth, you know that it's Alyssa Healy's child, because she is a classic in the commentary box for a little bit of side mouth. Always got a little bit of a smart-ass response, old Alyssa. So, yeah, you are absolutely right. She's going to be a wonderful asset in the commentary box in future. She's just moved into that so seamlessly, hasn't she? And I don't think it's a bad thing that she's married to one of the Australian male players. I think that actually does add to the whole shtick of it all. So, yeah, looking forward to hearing plenty more from her in times to come, Soph, as I enjoy listening to you as well.
Yeah, I've enjoyed having a taste of Alyssa during the Ashes and hearing her talk about Starkey and having a bit of that banter. She adds a lot to that commentary. She does add a bit of spice. I find some of the girls' commentators don't have as much spice as she's had, and I've really enjoyed that banter and that camaraderie she already has with a lot of those male cricketers, probably because she feels quite comfortable with them. She's probably met them multiple times, with Starkey being her husband. Look, let's move on straight away to Steve Smith out of the T20s against Pakistan, and also not named in the preliminary squad for the World Championship T20s. Bit interesting after his recent performances in the BBL. He got a century off 41 balls only earlier this week. What did you make of it?
Yeah, he's been exceptional in the BBL, and maybe that's part of the problem, is he maybe wasn't necessarily in our best 11 or best 15 3 months ago before the BBL has started, but he's been so good. It must have been very, very difficult to leave him out. You'd also make the argument that David Warner has been exceptional in the BBL competition, and we're not going to pick him either. So, yeah, very, very difficult. And I don't completely rule out the concept that they'll bring him back in for the T20 World Cup. They're well within their rights to pick from outside that squad. That preliminary squad, really, it's just a bunch of names. It kind of means nothing at all. So, yeah, he's going into the BBL finals very shortly. If he puts up another couple of really big performances, he might be difficult to leave out. And you think about this, Soph. The best wicketkeeper batter Australia have is Alex Carey. He's not in the squad. And the best batter Australia has is Steve Smith, and he's not currently in the squad either. Sometimes your best players, regardless of the format, are your best players for a reason. So, yeah. I reckon that's something the selectors will wrestle with, and wouldn't shock me if they backflip on that between now and the T20 World Cup, because, well, Steve Smith's that sort of player, isn't he?
I agree. I think he's still a sniff for the World Cup. And what I really appreciated was his response after not getting picked. And obviously, as we all are in media and we're in media, it's the first question that he gets asked whether or not he's disappointed. And he's pretty open with saying it looks like the selectors have chosen some youngsters and he's actually been working on trying to hit the ball further and make runs quicker. And so maybe he wasn't at the forefront of their mind for T20 because he's traditionally – it's not his strongest part of his game, making runs quick. But look, after the BBL finals, if he goes well, I think the selectors are well within their right to potentially change their minds. And Steve Smith seems to be not even alarmed by it or shocked by the decision necessarily. But talking about the BBL finals, they're coming up. It's the Scorchers, Sixers, absolute heavyweights, followed by the Hurricanes and the Stars. It's the top four out of the top eight which make it. The first match will be against the Scorchers and the Sixers, which finished first and second. And they have kind of if they win that game, they're straight into the finals, but they also have a second chance if they don't to beat the winner of the Hurricanes and Stars. What do you think we can see from these BBL finals?
Well, I think it just underlines how good the Perth Scorchers and Sydney Sixers have been for so long. The Perth Scorchers, you might make the argument that they've played on the Wacker Ground and now on Optus Stadium, and that is quite the hometown advantage, but it doesn't really explain why, in particular, having lost some of their most feared bowlers in the competition. So Jason Behrendorf has left and gone to the Melbourne Renegades. Andrew Tai went to the Melbourne Renegades as well and is now retired altogether. But why is it that these guys have just consistently been so good for so long? I wish I had the explanation, because you'd share it with the Adelaide Strikers, who, yeah, largely disappointing once again. So, yep, those two sides, Perth Scorchers, Sydney Sixers, Hobart Hurricanes, you can't rule out either. The holders of the title won it last year, and then the Melbourne Stars, who are an absolute anomaly, the only team in the competition who've never won it, and they've always been the glamour team of Melbourne as well. So I think it's a really exciting final series. I am so glad as well, Soph, that they've gone back to just 1v2, 3v4, a preliminary final and a final. Four finals is all we need. They had a final five for a while. Adelaide almost made the finals, if you consider that it was a final five not so long ago, and that would have been pretty outrageous considering how they played. So, yeah, looking forward to a couple of cracking games. I really get into this time of year. I mean, obviously, I'm a Strikers person and I watch them religiously, but once the BBL finals start, you can tell that they're playing for a fair bit. It means a heck of a lot. This competition is going to be interesting to see where it ends up in 2-3 years' time, with potential for private ownership coming in and what that means when measured against what's going on all around world cricket. But yeah, the next week, as an alternative, if you like, to the tennis, the BBL really will stand out with these four sides and the Australian players who are potentially going to stay involved before they head off to Pakistan.
Yeah, well, speaking about the Strikers, it was a pretty disappointing year. We finished sixth on the ladder. It was nice to end on a win against the Renegades, bowling them all out for 99. I was sitting at home waiting for a friend who was going to meet me at Adelaide Oval, and I had to message her thinking, we're already twofer and we better get to the game, because I didn't expect this. I thought it was going to be a pretty good game, you know. They were pretty neck and neck on the ladder, and next minute I'm thinking this game could be over pretty quick. I know you were there. I know you were at the game. What did you make of the Strikers' season? It was obviously disappointing. I think there's something to do with our recruitment there. What do you think we can improve on for next year?
Your point's well made, Soph. It was a really important victory just to, I guess, regain some respectability after what was a dreadful year for the team. And it's been three ordinary years back to back. I mean, if you miss the finals three times in a row, when it's four, sometimes five teams getting in to finals on an eight-team competition, you really have underperformed. The obvious problem for the Strikers was batting. They had only three players in the team who scored 100-plus runs. Every other team in the competition had at least five. So that just really stood out to me, that there were too few having to do too much. Mackenzie Harvey, who I like as an option, but maybe a little bit further down the order, his transition from one-day domestic cricket, where he's been absolutely superb for South Australia, did not transfer to the BBL. We had him batting at three, and I don't think that helped the team at all. And then Jason Sanger, who was an excellent recruit and came from the Sydney Thunder last year, was one of their most significant players. He looked for everything like he was really going to solve some problems for us in the middle order, but he was absolutely awful. I think he averaged something like 7 for the entire series with, I think, only about 60 runs for the season, and he played pretty much every game. What that meant by playing Harvey and Sanger at 3 and 4, in particular in the early parts of the year, was that Liam Scott, who was our leading run scorer for the competition, was batting at 5 and was just out of the game for too long. He was shuffled back to number 4 by the end, but it was curious the way they used him. He was a superstar at number 3, looked wonderful for us, the Adelaide Strikers, last year. And so to end up shuffling down to number 5 was really wasteful, I thought. So I think you're going to see, I would imagine, Chris Lynn with the new rule that allows you not to have to field. I mean, he's been using that rule himself for 5 years anyway, Linny. But I imagine he's going to front up and play one more year. Matt Short at the top of the order. I mean, he's a lock there, of course, an Australian player. And then you go through from there. Yeah, Liam Scott has to bat 3. It's always a very difficult spot to bat 4, but I wonder whether maybe it's someone like a Jamie Overton who comes in, who scored 90-odd runs for the team this year. So anyway, they do have some massive issues to sort out with their batting. The other thing, that there was only 2 of their best 100 partnerships in history of the Adelaide Strikers. Just 2 of them came this year, the 25th all-time and the 72nd all-time. Now, we've only got a 15-year league, and that's well unders, that you just couldn't get 2 guys to bat together long enough for often enough. So they are the obvious issues, is the batting, is where they batted in the order and how they created pressure on the opposition by batting in partnerships. The bowling was really good. I think the variety is there. Jamie Overton, I like. Luke Wood, the left armer with his variety, was good. Hassan Ali, be interesting to see whether they keep him on. Tabrez Shamsi is a really interesting story. Wasn't going to get a no objection certificate from his home country, South Africa, because their league, the South African T20 competition, coincides with ours. He got the opportunity to come and play as a marquee player here and turned his back on the South African league. That was a massive story that perhaps no one was really across. And that's going to be a bit of a template to see how that plays out, because he had to take the South African cricket board to court to go and play, come and play here in Australia. Cam Boyce, probably done. Lloyd Pope, excellent once again. A wonderful leg spin bowler in this format of the game. And Liam Scott, again, probably deserves more opportunity. So I don't think it's a complete blow it up situation, but they certainly need to solve something with their batting. And then it's going to be interesting to see who they bring in as a bowler, as their third or fourth international. I imagine Luke Wood may not come back. Hassan Ali would be a question mark. Do you need to bring a batter back in? So they had Ollie Pope last year and he failed dismally. Do they go for another batter to bat at number 4, really tough place to bat, or do they keep going bowling for their international players? All to be decided. I don't think it's a disaster for the Adelaide Strikers, but certainly some change is going to come.
Yeah, 100%. An excellent recap of the Strikers season. Let's jump over to the Women's National Cricket League, the WNCL. SA, funny enough, we're currently sitting 6 again on the ladder. We're second to last in this. There's only 7 teams in this division. However, 4 out of the 7 teams have already played 6 matches. SA are only played 4. So we've got a really big chance to climb up that ladder in our next few games, but we also have a chance to completely fall. Our SA girls during this fortnight have had a pretty poor start against WA over in Perth. Yep. The opening game, we fell short by 52 runs, and in the second game, it was by 8 wickets. It was pretty disappointing defeat, really, against WA. They hadn't won a match yet, I'm pretty sure. So, Hookie, what were your thoughts on the game?
Shocking weekend in Perth, Soph. I was really, really disappointed by this. Two losses to Western Australia, who previously had 0 wins in this competition. And quite frankly, they are a bang average team. We were loaded up for this game. Darcy Brown came back. Talia McGrath came back for the second game. Megan Shute was back. I mean, that is full strength for South Australia and a team that should be really in the mix for these sorts of titles. Western Australia were 4 for 50 in game 1, and that from there, South Australia should be able to close that out and bowl them out for something under 150. They eked out 250, and we were bowled out for 190, lost our last 5 wickets for 17. just not good enough. And then game two, we were 3-for-4 when we batted first, all out for 152. Western Australia chased them 2 down. Losing one of those 2 games over there would have been a bit disappointing, but twice seems incredibly poor. And they go from a position that they had a really good opportunity in the second half of the year with lots of games and some teams that I expected them to beat, to really being behind the eight ball now. By the time you're listening to this on Wednesday, we will have already played Queensland for the first of 2 matches that we play up there against them. We play them again tomorrow. Now, if we blow both of them, the rest of the crowd gets away from us a little bit. They'll be still have some games in hand, and we'll be playing Victoria and ACT, which are 2 sides that I also expect us to beat. But having expected us to beat Western Australia, I just don't know where they're at. And they're not going to get any stronger than this because the India series is going to come up, I beg your pardon. And you'd expect McGrath and Brown to play a lot of that and Megan Shute to at least play the T20s as well. So, I looked at a fair bit of those games and we looked like we were just completely outfielded. They fielded really well, Western Australia, and we just didn't look like we had the same hustle. And they were very, very disciplined with the way they played their cricket. And we just seemed very, very loose. So yeah, there's a bit of work to go back into that team. Gemma Barsby as captain, I'm sure, will be reading the riot actors a little bit, as well as Mick Delaney, the coach. But yeah, they're going to have to find some form and find it very quickly, because that was just out of the box bad last week in Perth.
Well, they've just named their 13-player squad, and as you mentioned, they would have already played their first game against Queensland by the time this comes out. They brought in fast bowler Courtney Neal. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, Courtney Neal's been a bit of a regular in that team and really only missed because there's been a number of other big names around. Courtney Neal from Kensington, we'll get to them very shortly. She actually captained the South Australian second 11 team, so pretty experienced bowler. Don't mind her coming back in. Bit of experience, a bit of calmness and a bit of discipline and just some consistency in the bowling attack, I think is a good addition.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe someone with a bit of experience as well. I can imagine they're a bit rattled having lost both games to WA, and maybe with a bit of that maturity coming into the team, or at least coming into the squad, might help them settle their nerves coming against Queensland and make them reset a little bit. I think sometimes a little small change can make all the difference. Well, Hoogie, let's head to local cricket. I know this is part of your favourite part of the show. What happened in the men's premier cricket?
Yeah, it was a cracking round, Soph. There were 2 dreadful first innings losses in Division 1, which actually became outright wins, and both of those teams collect 10 valuable points. That was Port Adelaide, who collapsed in their first innings to Kensington, declared at 5-for-80, I think it was. Kensington declared at none for none, and then Port Adelaide in their second innings chased down what was essentially Kensington's first innings score, and the identical thing happened at Price Memorial Oval between Sturt and Adelaide. Adelaide, I think, they might have been 6-for-40, so they were completely out of it, just going to get trounced, declared. Sturt also declared. And Adelaide then batted beautifully in the second innings and chased those runs down. Now, the 2 teams that won on first innings don't lose any points. They keep their 15 points and they'll all make quotient points up as well. But that was really important for Port Adelaide and for Adelaide to stay in touch with the top 4 and stay in and around the top 4, if you like, by collecting those 10 outright points. So that was absolutely massive for them. The other big result was West Torrens, who beat Woodville. Now, that was a really important win for West Torrens. It got them off the bottom of the ladder and back in the mix of the competition. And West Torrens, I think, are still very much in the running to win this Division 1 competition. They're very, very strong, and I expect that they'll be very, very strong at the back end of the year as well when finals are played. And Tea Tree Gully are the side that's suddenly run into a bit of trouble. They've lost to East Torrens, and that puts them at the bottom of the ladder now. And that's just a spot you do not want to be because of the promotion relegation system. 7th and 8th both go down, and 1st and 2nd in Division 2 come up. So, yes, suddenly Tea Tree Gully, that are another team that I think really are a genuine top 4 side, are under all sorts of pressure. So they've got some work to do. They're not out of it, but they've got to start winning some games quickly because it can get away from you and suddenly you're fighting relegation, which is not where you want to be.
It's an extremely interesting fortnight of cricket for the local cricket. Let's head over to the women's, the T20 finals. What happened over there?
Kensington absolutely annihilated Adelaide. Was not even a fair fight. This was over pretty much as soon as Kensington won the toss and batted first. Three experienced players, Eliza Doddridge, Bridget Patterson and Madeline Penner, all too classy for the Buffaloes. What did they score? Around about 160-something. I didn't look that up, but I know it was a 116-run win. Adelaide weren't in the fight at all. They were bowled out for 50, a bit over 50, I think it was, Soph. So congratulations to Kensington. Absolutely dominant in the T20 Grand Final and richly deserved trophy that they lifted at around about midday yesterday.
Yeah, it's a huge win, 116 runs. That's massive. Probably not great for the spectators watching. Wasn't much of a fight, but look, huge congrats to Kensington. That is massive for them. How about let's look over at the men?
Yeah, well, I've got to say the men's final was a wonderful game of cricket. So basically every South Australian player fronted up, despite the BBL still pretty much going on all around us. So Harry Manenti was there. Harry Nielsen was there. Wes Agar was there. Henry Thornton was there. So it was a wonderful, wonderful game. Two very, very good lineups. It was Kensington again who won. It was a 15-run win. I actually thought West Torrens, the team that went down in the end, were really making a wonderful fist of the chase. Daniel Drew, the captain of West Torrens, was in and going really smartly. When Harry Manenti got to the crease, Manenti started okay, but just sort of lost his rhythm with the bat, racked up a number of dot balls, which is unlike Harry Manenti. He is normally a very, very rapid scorer. And I could tell that Daniel Drew felt the pressure with that. He ran at Wes Agar, got a wide one that he thrashed at, hit it to backward point. He was caught. And that really just set West Torrens back on their heels and they never quite made it up. Oh, Lloyd Pope as well played for West Torrens and bowled beautifully played for Kensington and bowled beautifully for them as well. So, yeah, the Kensie men, along with the Kensie women, have gone back-to-back. I think the men's second grade on the same day have won, for Kensington, have won the T20 second grade competition as well. So what an amazing day for the Browns, hey?
Can you imagine the celebrations back at the clubhouse?
Yeah, and they do celebrate that club. I know full well. I've seen a couple of cheeky little Instagram posts and reels of those sorts of things, and they were into it, and so they should. They've deserved it. That is as dominant as you can get. 116 runs by the women, 15 runs by the men. That was a good game of cricket. Kensington men beat a very, very good team. I don't know that I can say the same for the Kensington women, but they absolutely put them to sleep early on. And my goodness, in a cracking game, Kensington men defeating West Torrens. Wonderful performance. Richly deserved two trophies.
Now let's go to my absolute favourite part of the show. Hooky, who is your local legend for the fortnight?
Good question, Soph. I can't go past a bloke that I really only met formally for the first time a couple of weeks ago when I went up to host the Australian Country Championships post-match presentations. During that presentation, which was actually the women's competition, the Australian Country Cricket Council inducted South Australia's Beau Wall into their Hall of Fame. He spoke beautifully, actually. He said, because his name's Wall, it should be not so much a Hall of Fame as a Wall of Fame. He was very funny, spoke beautifully. He's represented the South Australian country team in the men's division of the championships 62 times across 11 championships. So you think about that. 11 years he played for South Australia. He was dropped for two in the middle of that, which is sort of hard to believe. His final match for South Australia was in Mount Gambier. It was back in 2016 where he fittingly hit the winning runs to secure South Australia the title. Across that time, he served as captain for 11 matches across two championships as well. He scored the most runs for South Australia with 1,475 runs. He was a member of the Australian country side on three occasions. Sunraysia 06-07, Barossa Valley 08-09, and Albury Wodonga in 2009-10. One of the really nice guys of the game. Grew up in Burra, has more recently moved to Tanunda. Yeah, just and like a bit of a Bush Bradman, I think, is probably the best way to describe him. He'd be embarrassed by that description. I don't think he'd want the comparison to Bradman at all, but just a wonderful, dedicated servant of the game. Never really came down to the city and played. Was always a country kid. Dominated everywhere he went. Was a very good footballer as well. But, congratulations to Beau Wall, who is now in the Australian Country Cricket Hall of Fame as one of South Australia's best ever country players.
That's an awesome story. One of your best so far, Hooky. I love hearing that. I do agree. It should be instead the Wall of Fame. I like that change. If his name is on it, I think he can change it a little bit for himself.
He's only the third South Australian to be in that Australian Country Cricket Hall of Fame as well, behind Don Woon and Rod Johnson.
Oh, well, then 100% he can change it to the Wall of Fame if he wants. He's only the third one there. I think they won't have an issue with it.
Do you reckon Don asked for it to be the Woon of Fame? Could you?
All right, well, before this gets carried away, how about we wrap up the show with Hooked on Sport's SA Cricket Medal Ladder. There's a lot of cricket for both the women and the men.
Yeah, so two disappointing performances, as we said, from the South Australian women. In the first game where they went down by 52 runs to Western Australia, I gave Gemma Barsby the three votes, got runs and took three wickets. Darcy Brown came back and bowled well. She's been a little bit wayward, Darcy, but got wickets early, and South Australia should have capitalised on that, and they didn't, but she gets the two votes, and Courtney Webb got the one vote in that game. Then in the second game, I gave three votes to Emma Dubrow, who got runs at the top of the order. Talia McGrath with 47 was actually the leading scorer for South Australia in that game, gets the two votes. And Amanda Jade Wellington, who was the best of our bowlers, only took the one wicket, but there was only two to fall. But she always looked a bit of a threat, took six overs, one for 27, Amanda Jade Wellington. So that gets us to the leaderboard. So Nathan McSweeney, the South Australian men's captain, still leads on nine from one, by one from Mac Harvey. Jake Lehman is on seven votes. Nathan McAndrew and Liam Scott on six. Wes Agar, Brendan Doggett, Jordan Buckingham on five. Here's where the women have started to move. Gemma Barsby is up to four alongside Courtney Webb. Henry Hunt is on three, but then so is Ellie Johnson, Emma Dubrow, and Amanda Jade Wellington. On two votes, Connor McInerney, Lloyd Pope, Matty Penner, Harry Manenti, Ben Manenti, Darcy Brown, Talia McGrath, who both picked up votes in those most recent games. And rounding us out on one vote, Courtney Neal, as we said, coming back into the South Australian team for the Queensland games. And Harry Nielsen, Soph.
Lovely. Looking like a tight leaderboard. A couple of adjustments to be had once it's all over and those women might make a few little leaps and bounds up the leaderboard. Hookie, always fun having a yarn to you about the cricket, and I can't wait to speak to you again in another fortnight about the cricket.
Yeah, there'll be so much to talk about then. We'll be right into the women playing their series against India, and we'll be heading towards the Men's World Cup as well. So, yeah, so much to talk about.
Great show, Hookie. Have a great day, and I'll speak to you soon.
Looking forward to it, mate. You too.
That's Stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.